All right. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, sitting in for Pedlin Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It's July 11th, 2018. Welcome to Bicycle Talk. Pedlin Ron is away. He's off to be trained about solar energy. This is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or would like to contribute information to the show, you may email Ron at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. For today, you may email me, Fran, with questions at radionaturopath@gmail.com. Or if you are listening to this on podcast, you can send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com, or you can visit and comment at Bicycle Talk on Facebook. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. All right, here's Ron's rant of the week, and I guess also Fran's rant of the week. Let's see. So the rant of the week is... Ron gave this to me. That rider on the group ride that just has to ride 20 to 50 yards off the front and not knowing that is making all the others in the group anxious and is actually making them ride beyond their ability or desire that day. So anyway, so if you're on a group ride, one of Ron and my pet peeves is that if you're on a group ride, you should respect the pace of the ride. If somebody has put a ride together for you and they've told you it's going to be at this pace and this distance, when you're doing a group ride, of course, one of the things that's going to happen is there's going to be some ground rules set for that group ride. Now, if you're with a group of people that you've been riding with a lot and you know each other and you know what the ground rules are and you're happy with that, of course, that's fine. And so if the ground rules in a particular group ride is that we all stay together and it's not been stated that it's okay to ride off the front, then you shouldn't do that. It's not nice. And then if you're told, please don't ride off the front, don't keep doing it. I kid you not. I've been on rides where I've been the leader and people rode off the front repeatedly and missed turns. And we were kind enough to chase the riders down and say, hey, you missed a turn. If Ron were here, Ron gets much more up in arms than I do about this. And he will say, you know, if you miss a turn, you're off the ride. But I think it's a kind thing to do. One, if the ground rule for that particular group ride is that people are not going to be riding off the front, that you're all going to stay together, then it's good to respect that and know that if you're off the front, you're off the ride. You're just not going to be on the ride anymore. However, if you're going to do different things, if you're like, I'm going to ride off the front, can you tell me where the next turn is? That's sort of okay. It's not really great because the thing is, once somebody starts riding off the front, it's like Ron said, you're starting to make the other riders on that ride anxious and make them feel like they have to work harder than even they're able to. And your ride gets really strung out. So people don't know that. They feel like, oh, I'm on a ride that's too slow for me, so I'm going to ride off the front and it's okay. People are letting me do it. And they're not realizing that there are people in the back that are struggling to stay on the ride. And I had a perfect example of that kind of ride a few weeks ago. It was very difficult because I felt bad because I was the ride leader. I needed people to know where we were going. And I had people who couldn't possibly keep up with the people that were riding off the front. And it was just a classic example of that. Again, there are some rides where that is encouraged, that people regroup at corners. And if that's your ground rules, that's great. So I guess the basic thing is, if you have a group ride, follow the ground rules of your group ride, whatever that is. All right. So if you want to do further discussion about that, you can go to the Facebook page on Bicycle Talk and talk about how you feel about this. Here's the positive side. Happy birthday, Nancy Kranger. It was my sister Nancy's birthday yesterday. She's blah, 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 years old. I don't know if she wants me to tell you how old she is, but she's younger than me. So I'm 54, so she's not that. So that's one of the positive things. The other thing is that it's Tour de France time. Yay. So real quick, I'll give you a summary of what's going on. So if you want to know who's the top three in the GC, the general classification, Greg Van Avermaet from BMC Racing. He's wearing the yellow jersey right now, followed by American TJ Van Garderen, also from BMC. How exciting is that? And number three is Geraint Thomas. From Sky. So that's exciting. The top team right now is Quick Step. The top points is, of course, my sweetie bear, Honey, Peter Sagan. Yeah. He's so funny, and he's having a great time right now. Followed by Fernando Gaviria is from Colombia, and he won the stage yesterday. That was an exciting sprint. Did you see it, Don?
No, okay. No, I didn't. I'm sorry.
So a very exciting sprint between, came down to the wire. It was Gaviria, Sagan, and Kittel. And they came down to the end, and you could see, they have that lovely overhead view. And you could see Sagan, he launched too early, so he was not able to get around Gaviria. And so he did come in second. So Kittel's doing very well. He's a big guy, and he's a big, strong, powerful man. But so it was the three. It was down to the three of them, and they launched. Sagan was trying to trail them, but he launched. He went off too early, and that's what happened. And Gaviria had the advantage. I've never even heard of him before. How exciting is that? He's riding for Quickstep. He's a cutie. Awesome. All right. So the King of the Mountains right now is. They're not talking so much about the King of the Mountains because there are mountain points. Because they haven't gone into the hills yet. So the guy's name is Dion Smith. It looks like he's from Australia, and he's from the Wanty team. So how nice is that? And then the top young rider right now is Soren Krach, who I've never heard of, from Team Sunweb. So that'll be interesting to see what this young fella in the white jersey is going to do. And then the most aggressive rider right now is, there's no data for the most. Okay, so maybe they don't have one yet. All right, so that's what's going on in the Tour de France. The other thing about the Tour de France is that Chris Froome was cleared of all charges. So, you know, there was some issue that he had overdone it on some... not albuterol. Anyway, a bronchodilator, salbutamol, which is an over-the-counter bronchodilator. And he has asthma. And if you have asthma, if you're riding a Grand Tour, your asthma is going to get tweaked and you're going to need to take some medicine. So he was cleared of charges because I guess they decided, in fact, he does have asthma and it's okay for him to use some of that medicine. The problem is that when you take bronchodilators, they're performance enhancing because why? They open up your lungs. Hello. All right. So one more thing before we get to our very special guest that Ron wanted me to talk about, and that is the maintenance minute. He wanted me to tell you about this, and that is the special tire casing patch. All right. So I don't know too much about this, so I'm just going to read what he gave me. And so this is the deal. When you have a cut so severe that you will not just be able to replace the tube without blowing out immediately, the commercial boot available at your local bike store, the bike tire boot, that you can use. It's a special tire casing patch. You can get that of the bike tire boot. So what you do is you locate the cut or tear in the tire. You clean the inside of the tire around the tear. So you might want to keep alcohol wipes with you to clean off the tear. Then you locate and remove the emergency tire boot backing. And then you place a patch over the damaged tire casing, making sure not to overlap the tire bead. Then you firmly press down the patch, and then you reinstall the tire and tube. You can also make one yourself if you want to. And so this is what Ron recommends. I don't know if this is as good as if you bought the boot at the shop, but he wanted me to read this, so I'm doing it. All right. So you cut a section no bigger than 1.5 inches long out of an old tire casing so that you have a new casing under the old cut tire. You place it in a spare tire repair kit or bag. Duct tape works wonders. Wrap some duct tape around a small piece of plastic and keep it in your bag. And last but far from least, the dollar bill trick. And I've seen Ron do this all the time. U.S. currency is very strong. It's reinforced with silk, so it's a very strong paper, and so that it can be used over and over again and crinkled and wet and gone through the wash and all that stuff. So it's very strong. So if you don't have anything to patch and your tire's pretty sliced and you need to get home, you take a dollar bill. You fold over a number of times so the dollar will fit into the tire covering, the slice, and then you carefully place the tube with a little air in it in the tire. This keeps the dollar bill from moving around. Then you install the tire and tube on the rim. So that's really interesting.
Yeah, I've done that. I've actually used like a wrapper from a protein bar, like a snack.
Oh,
you know, you can just kind of fold that up. Usually those are kind of foil, pretty strong.
Yeah.
So you can kind of fold that up and stick it in there between, same thing, between the tube and the inside of the tire and everything. That'll help keep you together, at least to get you home.
To get you home, right.
That's the
goal.
So
that worked for you. That's
really
interesting.
That's the goal, get home.
So as you can see, I have a guest here. He is special. He is my special guest. He is Don Curtis.
Hello.
How exciting. And there he is over there.
That's right.
He's on Bicycle Talk today. So exciting. So before we get started about who all you are and everything, I have to ask you the question Ron asks everyone.
All right.
What was your first experience on a bicycle?
It's kind of, I don't really remember my first experience on a bicycle. I was very young. I remember my first bike was just this blue, you know, 16-inch wheel Schwinn. But I do remember getting my first 20-inch bike, which I thought was a huge deal. I was 5 years old. It was my fifth birthday.
Yeah.
And it was a Schwinn Stingray.
yes.
So super cool.
Banana saddle.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. And the big handlebars that, you know, and the you could hang stuff off the back of that
sissy bar.
Yep. And everything. And it looked huge. I mean, it just looked absolutely huge to me as a 5 year old. And I remember grabbing it and riding it around our house as many times as I could, you know, kind of cranking it up the hill on one side, down the hill on the other side, and around the house again. And I must have had that bike for 10 years. I rode it all over the place. I mean, one gear, you know, the brakes where you pedal,
coaster brakes,
yes. Everything. And I used to ride that all around town, you know, dangerous roads, no helmet. I mean, I don't know what I was thinking, but at the time we all did it.
Yes,
and,
we did.
And it was just, it was a beautiful bike because they're collectors.
Yeah.
So that old Stingray.
Right, because they're collectors.
I should have held on to it, you know?
Yeah.
That was a great bike, and I loved that. I mean, it was my mountain bike. It was everything. You just took it wherever you needed to go, you know? It was a tough beast.
Yeah. Very cool. So that's exciting. I remember that too, because, you know, so I don't know if everybody, you look like you're a little bit younger than me, but maybe you're not. I don't know. Because you're very fit. I'm 54.
Okay, I'm 44.
Okay, so you're 10 years younger.
Almost 45,
yeah. So you're 10 years younger than me, and both of us had that same experience that when we were kids, everyone had a bike.
Yeah.
If you got a bike for your birthday or Hanukkah, everyone came over to look at your bike, and you would all take your bike out. It was like a big deal and super
freedom.
Exciting to get a bike. Yes, and you would take your bike, and you would go to the 7-Eleven, or you'd go to the I lived in New Jersey, so we went to the 7-Eleven, or you would go. We would just ride our bikes to the library, and get a book,
we'd go to the playground and meet other kids there,
the
or
duck
something,
pond,
you know, anything. Yep. Yeah.
Oh yeah, and you, exactly, and you just ride your bikes all over the place. It was a way to get around. It's like you said, it was freedom. It was really fun.
Yeah.
And just everybody had a bike. It was sort of an assumed thing.
Yeah, that was what I remember most about sort of those summer vacations at that age, you know, when school was out and everything, was we all just met up on our bikes. You know, you'd ride over to one friend's house, and then we'd go to somebody else's house. And then, you know, so it was just all of a sudden there'd be a pack of us all riding our bikes around and you know, going up and down stairs on the bikes and just abusing them, you know, but just having so much fun.
Yeah.
Bringing a backpack and, you know, a swimsuit and some money or something, going to the store.
Yeah. Right.
It was great.
So I remember that freedom and delight that I had. And I always had a bicycle, you know, going up, you know, through my life. I had one, even if I didn't become a serious cyclist until 2004. Mm-hmm. Like, so we're talking, you know, 14 years ago. And so, but during my adult life, I always had one. And I had the same bike from, like, you know, I had different bikes that was my bike over time. They were usually Schwinn's. And the last one I had was, I still have it, the Schwinn Varsity Sport that I got in 1987. Still have
nice.
It. It's hanging in the, I became an avid cyclist, the first year I was an avid cyclist, that's what I rode.
Yeah.
A big, heavy 40-pound bike.
Right.
And
right.
I rode the MS ride. I rode 50 miles, a bunch of 50-mile rides on it. Yeah. And then I didn't get my first road bike
serious
until
road bike,
2005.
Yeah. Yep.
So great. All right. So let's find out all about you, Don. What
right.
is going on with you? So where do you live? Where do you come from? What do you do when you're not riding a bike?
Okay. Well, I live here in Mansfield.
Yeah.
And I'm a library media specialist, otherwise known as a librarian, for high school, Magnet High School out in Danielson. Quinnebog Middle College.
Very nice.
So,
Quinnebog Middle College. That's a thing.
Yeah, it is. It's a great thing. thing. It's on the QVCC campus.
Gotcha.
And so it's a high school where the students can take college classes and high school classes and all at one time. So,
oh, that is really neat.
Yeah. And being the librarian there is definitely a challenge and a very rewarding job. I mean, it's a great job. So that's what I do, you know, to pay the bills.
Right.
But it's a great way to do it. Still my summers, you know, my life kind of follows that same rhythm as it did growing up, where my summers are my summers.
That's
great. And that's when I get on my bike or I put on the running shoes or grab my kayak or whatever I can do, do a little camping and also catch up on my reading.
So you're off during the summer?
I'm off during the summer.
You are.
Yeah. So this is where I recharge my batteries and everything.
Nice.
Getting on the bike and cranking or going out on the road, whatever I can do.
That's really great.
Yeah.
And do you have a family?
I do. Yep. Yeah. I have two kids. My son, Robert, who just graduated from E.O. Smith.
Wow.
And my son, Cam, is going to be a sophomore this year.
Yeah.
My wife, Sarah, who runs Not Only Juice.
Oh, my. For reals?
Yeah.
I didn't realize you were married to Sarah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
My brain hurts.
Yeah.
I was just talking about Not Only Juice on Radio Naturopath.
I heard you.
Yeah. You are married to Sarah. Oh.
Right.
I can't even.
Right. Well, no. I mean, we're separated right now, but it's very amicable. Oh. It's fine. It's a learning and growth experience for both of us, I think.
Yeah. Not Only Juice is a wonderful place.
It's a great place.
Yes.
She's done something pretty amazing there, that's for sure. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I got to test out all those foods, you know, before she opened. So that was really, that was a lot of fun.
They make, so I got into, when I went to Florida a number of times, because I like to go visit my mother. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know what an acai bowl was. And I didn't know what one was. And then I went to a cafe and they had acai bowls.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
Now I know what the acai. So then I went to Not Only Juice one day. I'm like, wonder if they have those. And, you know, she has smoothie bowls.
Sure. Yeah.
And so one of them is called a unicorn bowl. And the unicorn bowl is, in fact, an acai bowl.
Right.
So.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
They
yeah.
make them in Willimantic. Oh, my goodness. That's so fantastic.
Right down the street. Yep.
Yes, it's so lovely.
Yeah.
So anyway, so that's terrific. So so you identify as a runner, though, do
I
you?
I do, yeah. It's kind of funny. I was a runner for a little while there, and going back even further, I as a teenager, I suffered a lot of injuries that I ignored, as a lot of teenagers do. They piled up on me by my late 20s, early 30s. I had a lot of back pain, a lot of knee pain, gained weight, wasn't exercising, anything like that. I'd never really had an exercise regimen. So I was, you know, rolling out of bed onto my hands and knees every day and like crawling into a standing position, all this stuff. It was a lot of pain.
As a teenager?
No, this is in my early 30s.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
Yeah, it was injuries that kind of compounded from my teenage years.
Uh-huh.
So finally I decided I needed to do something about it. I decided to lose weight, was the sort of the first step. So measuring out all the little like serving sizes that they said on the packaging and doing that and cutting down on my snacks. I figured out that sort of that after school snack was the really bad time for me. I just come home from school and just hit that bag of chips or whatever it was. So kind of altering those habits, and then starting to run, and getting into shape that way. So I dropped a lot of weight and was loving the running. I got those Vibram 5-finger shoes.
Really?
Easy on the back, easy on the knees. They're not paying me. I'm just saying I love them. And so I was running for a few years with those, just absolutely loving it. And then broke my foot, not running, but doing something else. So
don't you hate that?
Yeah, it was brutal. And I, again, like I did as a teenager, ignored it, thought it was going to be fine.
Yeah.
And it wasn't.
It's not fine.
But one of the things I did do was I was thinking, you know, I'm finally getting into shape. I don't want to lose this, you know, groove that I'm in here.
Yes.
I can't run.
Yes.
So I bought a bike.
Yeah.
Kind of risky. I thought, I don't know, I'm spending a lot on a bike. It was a used bike, but still I was spending more than I'd ever spent.
Yeah.
And I bought the shoes.
Yeah.
You know, never clipped into pedals or anything before like that. And I thought the stiff shoes are going to help because my foot will still be healing in those stiff shoes, you know? So I got on the bike and I started riding. And I really loved it. I still thought of myself as a runner. So that was about 5 or 6 years ago that I started riding. So I still think of myself kind of as a novice rider. The stuff you were talking about earlier about the group rides and things like that is completely foreign to me. Like I don't know the sort of the lingo of that. I've ridden on a couple of rides with some of the groups around town, and I like it, but I still kind of feel like a solitary rider. I kind of like, even when I run, I like that that solitude.
Sure.
There's a lot of sort of noise and music and things like that throughout the day, just people talking. And so I kind of like my rides and my runs to be that time without that background noise.
Nice.
Without that. So I do kind of enjoy my solitary rides and everything.
I hear you.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'd like to do more group rides, but the truth is I kind of cherish that alone time.
I think riding a bike should be fun and it should be what you want. And, you know, there's a lot to be said for group rides. There's a lot to be said for solo riding. You should make yourself happy.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's a lot to learn. I definitely have a lot to learn. I think riding in groups can help me become a better rider in a lot of ways. And so I've done races and things like that. And I think I could probably, you know, improve if I rode with groups. So really the only groups I ride in are when it's competitive, you know, when I'm riding against other people in a triathlon or something like that.
So, you've done some triathlons.
A couple of those, yeah.
You do, what distance?
Mostly, I guess they're sprint distances.
Yes.
But there's one out in Western Mass every year that I love called the Josh Billings.
Oh, and, you did the Josh.
Yeah, I've done it, I think, 5 years in a row now.
Yes, tell us about the Josh.
So it's instead of swimming, which I'm not that great at.
So did you do it as a relay?
No, I did it. Oh. I did it on my own.
Okay.
They put in it's paddling
in
a lake instead of swimming. Yes. And I thought, that's great. You know, I don't have to swim, you know. And so the order is a little different than most triathlons. You start on the bike, and it's a 27-mile, give or take, bike ride, and then 5 miles through Stockbridge Bowl, the lake that's up there. It's about 1.5 times around the lake, I think, for the 5-mile paddle. And people have canoes, they have kayaks, they have stand-up paddle boards, whatever they can grab. And
so it's, you don't have to be in a so you have to be in a vessel. You don't necessarily have to be in a specific canoe.
No,
you could be okay. So you're just not swimming.
You're just not swimming.
But you can be in a canoe, a stand-up paddle.
Mm-hmm.
You can be in a
kayak. Yep, yep.
That's
hysterical. I have a kayak. So people are
a
out
rowboat?
There. You know, I've never seen anybody in a rowboat, but I think that's probably okay.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I thought
so you have people in like these big, huge canoes. They look like they're kind of recreational canoes. And you have people in these really lightweight, thin canoes. They're like competition. They're really going out. So, I mean, it's a huge variety of people. And then the run is about a 10K run at the end, again, sort of around the lake. And that's a blast. It's a great activity. It's a lot of fun. So I've done that, I don't know, I guess 5 years or so in a row.
So the Josh has a silliness factor.
For some, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, there's you know, the party at the end is at, it ends at Tanglewood. So there's sort of a live band and all the, you know, sort of trappings of a large party.
Yeah.
But the event itself, there's some people that take it very seriously. There's some people that, you know, have teams and don't take it that seriously. I tend to take competitions pretty seriously.
Yeah.
So I get in there and I'm looking at, okay, what time did I have last year? Where do I need to be at the end of this stage to beat last year's time? How can I make my transitions faster? So I'm really, I get into all that.
Yeah.
I'm doing another try in Western Connecticut in about a week and a half as part of a ride that I'm doing coming up.
Yeah.
And that's a short one. That's
a sprint.
It's a sprint triathlon. Yeah. So it's a 1/2 mile of swimming, 10-mile bike ride, and then a 5K run.
Yeah.
So that's real quick.
Yeah.
So that'll be fun. That'll be a real nice
fun.
One. Yeah.
I did those, but I've been having running issues. So I used to be able to run a little bit, but I haven't been able to run it like that in the last few years. And now with the bursitis, it's not going to happen.
Right.
But those are fun. Sprint triathlons. Somebody said to me, "You can do a triathlon."
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "No, I can't. That's crazy." And then when I saw what it was, I'm like, "Oh, I can probably do that."
Right.
And then they did.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great feeling, isn't it?
Yeah.
Crossing that finish line thinking, now people have to refer to me as triathlete Don Curtis, you know, or triathlete Fran.
I know.
So, yeah.
Well, we did, what was her name? Sally, Sally Edwards. Sally Edwards is the big promoter of women getting into triathlon. Okay. And so she supported the Danskin series.
Okay.
And so they had the Danskin series. I'm not sure if, because I haven't been paying attention. I don't know if they're still doing the Danskin series or She Rocks. And they do it up at Webster Lake, Lake Chechamon. You fish on your side, I'll fish on that. You're my side, and nobody fish in the middle. So I did a number of those.
Oh, good. Were they sprint
there.
Distance? Or?
Oh, yeah. I haven't done anything but sprint.
Yeah. Well, I like how they call it sprint, too. It's like, it's not really a sprint. Like, I'm not sprinting very often in those races, especially not
yeah,
the run at the
end. Yeah, they call it sprint because the distances are so short that you can do your positive splits. It's not, you don't have to, like, really, you're just supposed to go all out for each one.
Which, right.
And you can do that with those distances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially with a team, too. Yeah. I see people even still doing those in a team.
Doing,
and
yeah,
so
relays.
A lot of times they'll kind of practice their pacing for longer races in those, you know, in in those shorter ones. So,
yeah, so I did three locations. I did both She Rocks and Danskin at Lake Chechamon, Webster Lake. And I did a couple times I did at Winding Trails, not the one where you ride a mountain bike, but the one where it had a road ride as part of it. But you run in the woods at Winding Trails. And I did the Niantic Bay.
And nice.
That was exciting because you swim in the ocean and they say, oh, it's flat. Don't worry about it. It wasn't.
No. I did another sprint up in Maine called, it was in Norway, Maine. I can't remember what it was called. Maybe just the Norway Triathlon or something. Yeah. I did that a number of years in a row as well.
Nice.
And that's another sprint. That was, I think, 1,000, I think it was 1 kilometer of swimming.
Uh-huh.
And slightly longer bike ride, I think 13 miles, something like that.
Yeah.
You know? So that's a nice length, too.
They're really fun to do. If you're able to swim and you're able to ride a bike and you're able to run, I think that a sprint distance triathlon is accessible to most people.
Yeah, I think
If you can do those three activities, because you're not in any of the disciplines for too long.
Right. Yeah. Most people that can ride a bike can probably ride 10 to 12, 13 miles. You know, most people that can run can probably run a 5K.
Absolutely.
The swimming is the one I think that always got me. So I've been trying to work on that a little bit this year. I go to the community center and this year was the year I said, okay, I gotta be better at this. Like,
yeah,
this
that's
is ridiculous.
That's everybody's sore spot. And yet I'm very fortunate in that because, you know, I've got this bursitis. So, I am very fortunate in that I've always loved to swim, and I think that's a Jersey thing, because when the thing is that we're here in Connecticut and you and I are sitting here at about the almost the 42nd parallel. We're at like 41 and change here, and so we're that far north. When you're down in Jersey, you're in the low 40s. It's almost 200 miles south of here, and so the thing with Jersey is that the season, the summer is longer, and it's somewhat longer and somewhat hotter. And here in Connecticut, we've got water on two sides of us because we've got the Sound that's half an hour south, and then we've got effects from, even though Connecticut technically doesn't have an ocean border to the east, you know,
it's
past Rhode
enough.
Island,
yeah.
And you get an effect. So it's not as it doesn't get as hot and humid here for as long.
Right.
And so you have a lot of people, there's something I noticed, you have a lot of people in Connecticut who don't swim. And I've noticed in my bike club, most of the people in the bike club don't swim or don't swim seriously. Some do, but most don't.
Right.
And then when you get to Jersey, you're getting into a climate where you got to swim. If you want to cool off, you have to get in the water, at least to go into the old swimming hole.
Right.
So more people are into that culture. The other thing is that the water here, if you go to the Sound, it's still in the 60s right now.
Yeah.
And it's going to be warmer sooner in Jersey.
Yeah.
So people are more likely to swim. People are more likely to have in-ground pools. People are more likely to swim. And my parents, I was very fortunate that my parents gave me swimming lessons. So I've been swimming. So swimming was not as much of an issue. However, I don't have panic attacks. I had my first panic attack, my first triathlon. Mm. And I don't have panic attacks.
Was it in the water? Or was it?
Yes.
Yeah.
I went into the water. I got into the water. I'm like, and I... My version of the panic attack was I had an asthma attack, and I don't have asthma. And that's what happened.
Right.
I couldn't breathe.
Yep.
I was, you know, and I got all filled up, and I couldn't put my – I practiced crawl. I couldn't put my face in the water. I was terrified.
That actually
is a thing.
Yeah, it happens to me.
Happens to
on some
everyone.
Level or another, just about every time. I get out about 200 yards and I go, "What am I doing? What am I doing here?" You know, because it's a lot different than a pool.
Yes.
They're all lakes and everything, and you can't see the bottom, and you're kind of out there in the middle, and you're like,
"Well,
whoa,
you're looking from the shore, and you're looking to the buoy, and you're like, oh my God.
Way out there.
First of all, you're hyped up because you've got race jitters.
Right.
Second of all, you're looking at it going, oh my God, I have to get to the buoy. And there's a bazillion people around you and you have to get around all the people.
Mm-hmm.
And it freaks you out.
Yeah.
And so that happened to me. I got this panic attack and then I'm like, all right, I'm going to carry Rescue Remedy with me to mm-hmm. every triathlon from now on and recommend it to other triathletes. And then I started talking to people about it. And I had very experienced people who do Ironmans who said to me, oh, yeah, totally a thing.
Well, that's good to know. I didn't know that other people suffered from that, too, because
it
happens almost every time I get out in the water.
You should talk to other triathletes about the phenomenon of you're a person who doesn't even have panic attacks and you have a panic
attack.
All of
a sudden. Yeah.
Yes, and it's totally a thing. Huh. And so it happened to me as a person who doesn't, I have poor patients who suffer from panic attacks in their everyday life. I don't.
Right.
But I did at that time.
Man. Yeah, yeah. It's tough. You just get out there. And like you said, the distance is all, it's one thing to be swimming laps in a pool.
That's right.
You're always there. You always see the bottom. You're whatever.
Even,
you know?
Well, to me, just go practice in Columbia Lake. If you're just practicing, big deal.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, I think because, you know, with this knee, I have been swimming both open water and in the pool.
Mm.
Swimming open water is very different than being in a pool because the open water has currents and waves. And it doesn't matter if it's a lake or a river. Some lakes are stiller than other lakes. Columbia Lake is not a particularly still lake. It has a roughly surface and there are a lot of boats on it. So
even going through sort of the different temperature changes in the water.
Yes, like
you wouldn't in a pool, you do it in a lake.
Got it.
And all of a sudden you're like, oh, it got cold.
Yes.
Like, what happened? All of a sudden you're going through a cold patch and it kind of...
Because the spring is coming
out. Yeah, it gets in your head a little bit when you're out there. Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
And then if you're on the sound or in the ocean, then you got waves. You got more waves.
Yeah.
They tell you there's not going to be waves, and they lie. It's true. All right. So we should really let's talk about the main reason why you're here. So first talk about you're going to do this ride to. You started the Ride to Run Challenge, but you're going to do this wonderful thing this summer. Tell me what led up to the thing you're going to do.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it was, I think, you know, being in Connecticut, a lot of us were very affected almost 5 years ago now when the Newtown shootings happened at the school, Sandy Hook. And my kids were in middle school at the time, and so we had a lot of conversations about that. And, you know, then this past year with what happened down in Florida and both my kids being in high school at the time, again, you know, we had a lot of conversations about it. They're a little older now. They're a little more worldly. They know, they pay attention to the news and what's going on. And they were actually part of the group at E.O. Smith that organized the walkout following that shooting. Watching those high school students from Florida and then my own children find their voice and take action about this was really, really inspiring for me. So my kids also made signs and went to the rally in Hartford. That was the next month after that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just, it was really inspiring seeing them do this. And I really felt like I should do something too. So I thought, well, what can I do? What do I know how to do? You know, I can ride my bike. I can run, you know. So what I decided to do was I would ride my bike across Connecticut from my original idea was to ride from their elementary school here in Mansfield out to Sandy Hook in Newtown.
That's
and
nice.
Back again and try and raise money for the March for Our Lives. I decided to not ride out to Newtown thinking that maybe they didn't really want to continue to be associated with that sort of a past, you know, they're probably moving on and everything. So I decided to still start at my own children's elementary school here in town and then ride out to around Kent, around that area in Connecticut. And there's a sprint triathlon there that I'll do once I get out there and then I'll ride back the next day. So it's about an 80-mile ride each way. And so I'll ride out on Friday of next week, the 20th. The triathlon's on the 21st, and then I'll ride back on the 22nd. It's a state park, so I'm going to camp out there and everything. So, you know, I was talking to friends about it and everything.
So you're going to do an 80-mile ride one day, and then you can do a sprint try the next day.
And then ride back. Yeah.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I kind of got this idea last year with doing this ride to run idea, which was riding two road races that I would compete in and
yes.
ride home. So I did it all around this side of the state. Some of them as short as 8 miles away. I rode to a run in Chaplin.
Yes.
And back again. I rode to Weathersfield. That was one of the farther ones. It was like about a 40-mile ride, and then rode
back.
Wow. So some of them were harder than others.
So you rode 40 miles. You did a 5K, and you rode home.
Yeah. Yeah. It was there were times where I was wondering what I was thinking, on the ride home. It was through Coventry and a lot of hills that
I didn't
know. It felt like every time I'd get up speed going down a hill, there'd be a stop sign at the bottom of the hill.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I just want to get up the next hill.
Right.
So it was riding back was tough on that one. I rode, to New London, to Norwich, Brooklyn, Woodstock, all over the place, all over this sort of Tolland, Stafford for different runs. So just kind of challenging myself in that regard. And so when this came up, I thought, you know what, maybe I can do that and do it to raise money for March for Our Lives. So I called it Connecticut Ride for Our Lives, the number 4, CT Ride for Our Lives.
Yes.
And went through what's called the Action Network, where you can sign up to create your own event and have it give to the organization that you want to give to. So I know the website's really long. I can't remember what it is. It's, one of those ridiculously long websites. But if you go to actionnetwork.org, you'll be able to find it. And I also put it up on Facebook,
yes.
CT Ride for Our Lives. Mm-hmm. And so all the proceeds will go to that March for Our Lives cause.
Yeah.
And anything is wonderful. But that's what the goal is for. The goal is just sort of to at least help the cause. And to do something, whatever I can do to help out. So that's the goal. That's the idea. So that's what I'm doing starting next Friday. I'll be leaving, I think, at 8 in the morning. That's my goal, is to get going at 8 in the morning. I figure it'll be a 7 to 8 hour ride with some breaks in the middle. Sometimes I want to take a break. Sometimes I need to take a break. I don't want to take too long of a break because, I just want to stay on the bike.
Sure.
And actually, my son is going to be accompanying me. He's not riding. He's going to be my support vehicle. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. He's going to have all the camping equipment in the car. I'm not going to do the ride with all my camping equipment.
Right. Okay.
So he's going to have all the camping equipment and things like that in the car. We'll schedule the breaks, throughout, and he'll camp with me and then ride back.
Oh, how nice.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
really great.
Yeah. Hopefully the weather will hold out and we'll have a fun time.
I think, I mean, we've got a spell of good weather coming mm-hmm. up. I can't promise you, but, But I think the next little while we should be blessed.
Hopefully it's not like last week. That was a little rough. The humidity.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's I would get up very early in the morning to ride or run last week, mm-hmm. and I see people out in the middle of the day, and I just think, man,
right.
I don't want to be out there. The 100-degree heat index and everything is not my friend.
I did that. I was the last ride I did before I took I'm taking my break now was mm-hmm. In Pennsylvania Dutch country. It was the Farm to Fork Fondo, Pennsylvania Dutch, and we climbed some gnarly hills with like 15% grades,
nice.
And it was probably in the mid-90s.
That was last week. You were doing that?
It was the 30th.
Yeah.
The 30th. Yes.
Man. Yeah, that's some hot riding. I mean, that is just, that can be pretty brutal. You
have
to make sure you're drinking a lot of water during those
rides.
Yeah.
I cannot believe I did not cramp once. I managed to not cramp. I was in shape for it, mm-hmm. and I had the head for it, and mm-hmm. I was amazed that I didn't cramp. I was hydrating very, very well.
Do you do like a Camelback style thing
at that point?
You just have the bottles
no,
on the bike?
No, because it's a Farm to Fork Fondo, and there's rest stops every 10, 15 miles.
Great. Yeah.
So okay. I even only had one water bottle,
mm-hmm.
and
nice.
It was fine. I never completely drained the water. What I would do is I would get to the rest stop, and I'd get to the water, and I'd just drink and drink and drink until I couldn't drink anymore.
Right.
And then I'd fill my water bottle.
Yeah.
And I do that at every rest stop. And so, I had some electrolyte stuff that I really like with me, as well as they had their own brand of electrolyte that they were using. So I did a combination of electrolyte and straight up water.
Yep, yep.
And then anything I felt I couldn't eat very much.
Yeah, I find that sometimes too. Yeah, and the heat like that, it's really, there's all this food at the rest stops, and you're like, you know what? I'm just going to keep going.
Some of it I packed. Yeah, some of it I was like, if it looked good enough and I didn't want to eat it right then, I took it with me.
Yeah.
So I was able to do gels and, you know, and goos and things like that, but not too much else.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes in that kind of heat, my stomach does cramp up when I try to eat.
Or you're just like, ugh, yeah. You're just a little queasy.
I did, 2 years ago, I did the PMC. And,
yes.
And it was my first time, and so far only time doing that.
What's the PMC?
Sorry, the Pan Mass Challenge.
Uh-huh.
And that is a charity ride for I think it's the Jimmy Fund.
Yes.
Yeah. So for cancer research, it was it's 100 miles give or take both days. So it's a 2 day event. I think it's about 108 the first day and maybe 90 or something the second day.
Yeah.
And it's a great ride, but they had that kind of thing with the rest stops where, you know, I'm sitting there thinking, I got to pack food, I got to pack water for 100 miles. And then, you know, every 20 miles or so, there's a full rest stop.
Right.
With, you know, all this food, all this water, everything. I don't have to pack anything.
No.
I can just pick it up as I go.
That's
like you
right.
had. So the second day, I said, oh, okay, one water bottle. Not going to pack food or anything like that. I'll
because you wind up, the other water bottle just gets hot and there's no point in having it. I mean, it's good to have if you, if it's really hot and for some reason you stop. So it's probably a good idea. I think the thing to do is to have the two water bottles. If you're on a ride like that, that's well supported, have two water bottles and have the second water bottle have plain water. Because if you have stuff in it, it goes bad.
Yeah.
So have plain water in it for just in case and carry, you know, a fizzy or a packet with you. So if you get stuck somewhere, like if you're stuck somewhere and you're getting sagged, you might get thirsty and then you'll need it.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I'm going to do that from now on.
Do what?
That, I'm going to carry two water bottles.
Two water
and
bottles?
Have one of them be plain water.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just keep emptying out the front one that has stuck my electrolyte in it.
It does get warm though, doesn't it? That
yes.
The water.
When,
if you're out for a long ride, all of a sudden you take a sip and it's deadly warm.
And you can get the you can get the insulated ones, but they work okay. But you know what? If you're really thirsty, it doesn't matter. That's why if you're really thirsty and your water is warm, then what I recommend is carry carry some electrolyte something, whether it's a powder or a fizzy or whatever your preference is, and carry it in a tart flavor. It can be a citrus flavor if you like that, or if it's a berry flavor, just make sure there's some citric acid in it, something to make it taste tart, because you won't mind as much that the water's warm if the flavor is tart.
Interesting. Okay.
Yes, sweet and hot.
Bleh. Yeah, yeah.
But if it's got something,
it's a little tartness to it, citric acid.
Yeah, citric acid, or if if you get one of the ones that have a little vitamin C in it, or if you get like an orange flavor, or, you know, choose a citrous flavor, then it'll be a little tart and won't mind it as much.
Okay.
That's what they do in Britain, because in Britain, they don't necessarily refrigerate soda. And I found that if you get a citrus flavored soda, it's not so bad if it's not, you know, in the icebox.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Good tip. I'll give that a try on my long ride. I mean,
right?
You know, I'll be loading up. That's for sure.
Yeah.
On everything, on water and all those different, you know, so I'll need my energy.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Oh, it's so exciting to what you're doing. Do you know what's going on? Like, what has been going on with Parkland? What do you know? What's going on with those kids right now?
Well, I know that fund, the March for Our Lives fund, basically what they're doing is they're pushing for sort of sensible gun laws. That's that's what they're looking for. And, you know, of course, I can say sensible and you can say sensible and our ideas about sensible can be very different.
That's right.
But specifically what they're aiming for nationally are National Gun Registry, closing the gun show loophole, and then banning things like high capacity magazines, assault or I guess military grade weaponry.
Yes.
And that's sort of harder to define. A lot of times, there's the assault weapons ban that ran out a few years ago. I can't remember. I think it was George W. Bush that allowed it to lapse. But,
yes.
You know, that defines a few pieces of what an assault weapon would be. And so it's sort of a combination of factors. So what they're looking for is, again, sort of to nationalize those laws, because right now, you know, while Connecticut might have some pretty decent laws, other states might not, you know, around us, or and so people can just travel over state lines in one direction or another, and bypass, you know, some of those laws.
Yeah.
Whereas if they're, you know, more national, then you know, the goal, of course, would be, you know, that we're all safer, especially you know, especially in schools. And it's not to say that, that's more or less important than anything else, but I think that really brings it home in a lot of ways. When you see these things happening in schools, you know, it makes you wonder what we're not doing well, and how can we do it better.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what you know, that's really what it's about, is figuring out, you know, why do these things keep happening? Why can't we stop them from happening? And why can't we even, you know, fund the CDC to study these things?
Yeah.
Who's standing in the way? What can we do about it if we don't agree with that sort of thing?
Right.
And if these sort of well-funded special interests are the things that are standing in the way, which essentially is what's happening, then people that feel as I do, in effect, have to become a well-funded special interest to battle it.
Yes.
And that's really the only, you know, the only way to do it is sort of on that same, you know, level, hopefully level playing field. It's not a level playing field, unfortunately,
well
right
said.
Now. So,
right.
So that's the goal. And that's what they're doing. And they're, you know, doing their best to kind of keep it in the press, keep it in the minds of the populace, because it otherwise, we start to kind of forget about it. We start to move on to the next crazy tweet
news cycle
or whatever it is.
Yes.
And then another one happens.
Right.
And then we all get, you know, enraged or sad or whatever it is about it.
Thoughts and prayers.
And then we move on to the next thing.
Right.
And so I think, you know, what's different about this is how articulate these kids are.
Yes.
How dedicated they seem to be. And how strong. Really, really impressed. And on a smaller scale, of course, you know, my own kids seeing it at home, seeing how they've been affected by it, seeing how they respond to it, and see how they have found their voice. And they're like, you people are crazy. Like, you people, how can you not have done something about this yet? You know, we remember Columbine, you know.
Yes.
That happened before my son was born.
Right.
You know, and he just graduated high school.
Doesn't even seem like it was that long ago.
Right. And so these things, like, so many things haven't changed. And when that happened in 1999, people said, you know, never again. And we're going to, you know, things are going to change. We're going to do something about it. And some things have changed on small scales, but really nationally, nothing really has changed.
Right.
The debate is still the same debate. Oh, it's not about guns. It's about people. You know, now it's about mental health is the issue that they're trying to reframe it as. And obviously, you know, no one's going to sit here and say, oh, mental health's not an issue. Of course it's an issue.
Can you say multi-hit theory?
Right.
That there's, you know,
absolutely.
There's, let's treat everything.
Let's treat it. Yeah. And let's study these things and let's do something about it rather than say, you know, kind of throwing up our hands and saying, well, America has a violent history. I guess we just, you know, we can't do anything because of the Second Amendment.
No,
we can do something.
No.
And I think that's what these students are saying.
What's so special, what you have to look at, and what nobody wants, because there's this, unfortunately, right now in our country, we have a very jingoistic bent.
Mm.
We've got that person in the White House who's heading up this idea that we are the best country in the world for no reason. Now, if he had reasons why we really were the best, that would make sense. But it's just jingoism with no substance.
Right.
Just saying we're the best. And there were studies that said that one of the things that Americans have is we have more confidence than other countries, and we don't have a whole lot to back it up.
Mm.
That we're the best at having confidence, but we're not the best at on a whole bunch of different levels.
Right.
One of the things that you're seeing is you have to be a scientist. You can't just get all emotional and say, well, we're the best and we deserve to have guns. You have to look at it and go, this is happening in America on a scale that it's not happening anywhere
right.
else.
Why?
Why is that?
Why?
There's something simple about it. And really, the simplest bit, because people get depressed other places. People mm-hmm. get horribly depressed.
Absolutely.
People have...
people play violent video games in other countries.
Yes,
people,
they do.
You know, all of those things.
So
you know,
something
other countries
is different.
Have a history of hunting and history of violence in other
yes.
countries. I mean, no country has more of a history of a hunting culture than Australia, and yet
yes.
they changed their own laws. They
and they,
they
and all
sure
of a sudden
there's
no more mass shootings.
Yeah.
And Canada almost never has mass shootings, and they have tons of guns in the whole yeah. hunting history.
Yeah, the Second Amendment argument is the one that people come back to all the time. Well, Australia doesn't have a Second Amendment. These other countries don't have a Second Amendment. And I think when people look at the Second Amendment, oftentimes they'll say, well, you know, it's really impossible to know what the framers of the Constitution, the writers of this amendment, meant by these words when they wrote them. So we have to interpret them. We have to say, do they mean this? Do they mean that? But really, we do know what they meant by these words, because in the Federalist Papers, Alexander Hamilton actually wrote about the Second Amendment in the 27th Federalist Paper, that it was meant to be for a well-trained militia. When he said well-regulated, what he was talking about was what essentially sounded like the National Guard. You know, you've got a citizenry that is armed for militia purposes. They are trained with those weapons. They're trained to protect their state, was basically what he was, you know, referring to at the time. And that's what that is for. That's mm-hmm. not for private citizens to all of a sudden have access to heavy artillery. You know, that's not what that Second Amendment was for. It was,
right.
it was basically for that well-regulated, meaning trained, regulated sort of meant trained militia group that was not some splinter militia that were sort of calling themselves a militia. It was an official militia group that was trained by the state, not by the country, not a national, you know, army or standing
yeah.
army or anything like that. And that's what was explained when they were sort of lobbying for the Bill of Rights to be passed. And so we do know what they meant by it. They didn't
yeah.
mean that I can walk into my local Chick-fil-A or whatever with my, you know, my automatic or semi-automatic rifle, that I can go and buy a bump stock so that I can turn my semi-automatic into an automatic style rifle. That's not what they were talking about. They
yeah.
were talking about a well-trained militia
right.
to come to the aid when needed. And so this idea that, well, we can't really tell what they meant, you know, because it was 200 plus years ago and you know, all this stuff. No, we do know what they meant. They did not mean this. They did not mean this.
It's an excuse. And it's this there. So you've got this this bent of people who are in pain, and they feel like they have a need to assert their authority and their aggression.
Somewhere. Yep.
And instead of and that's what's going on right now. I'm the big man. I'm the big one. Look at me. I'm the best. I'm this. I'm that. And that's the MO that's mm-hmm. being supported in this country, or that's being presented by the government right now. Instead of a government where, when everybody does well, everybody does well, where you care. Because the thing is, if everybody is doing well, then you can't have somebody winning. And, you know, Orange Man is all
right.
about winning.
Right.
And so when you have these individual guns, it's all about you. It's
mm-hmm.
all about you, and you're fierce and you're protective and you're a killing machine and you're a big deal. And I think America must be suffering from feeling a lot of shame and weakness right now. Because
or powerlessness.
Yes,
I think,
because there's this need to engage mm-hmm. in games of pseudo power. It's not, to me, it's weakness to,
yeah.
I think it's weak to walk into Chick-fil-A or not only juice with a semi-automatic. That's a
yeah.
sign of weakness. That's if I look at you and you have to walk around with your gun, I'm like, what's wrong with you?
Right.
You know, what?
Yeah.
Why are you? What's your shame about? Because
yeah.
people who are very powerful. I mean, if you go to martial arts and you have incredible training, or if you're a Navy SEAL, you don't go around flaunting it. In fact, if you're a very powerful person in any way, even if you're an athlete, you know, we talk about this, how people post their workouts on Facebook.
Yeah.
We talk about how it's a little There are furring again with that.
Sure.
But like when I post, I try not to post. I don't post my numbers. Mm-hmm. I post, look at this thing I saw. Look at these people I hung out with.
Right.
Look at this fun time I had. I won't post my Strava or my Fit Digits,
mm-hmm.
because people get a head trip about that.
Right.
And I don't want to be boasting.
Right.
And I want to include people right. in what's going on. And that's, I think, one of the things we've lost is the sense of inclusiveness.
Yeah, I think the sort of the national debate, coming from the president, coming from, the administration or our government officials, is very much a reflection of what you're talking about, of the way people act, which is that in order to build themselves up, they put other people down.
Yeah.
And I think that sort of has trickled throughout, whether they're a reflection of sort of the populace or whether the populace is a reflection of them, I don't know. But I think that that it's definitely, it's an issue that comes up when you're talking about things like gun control, where as you say, people feel like they need to exert a power where maybe in the rest of their lives they don't have it.
They feel
and
powerless.
So economically, yeah. they're depressed or whatever it is.
Yes.
So they're like, you know what? I've got my gun. I've got my gun and no one's going to take it away from me. And that's the power that I can exert.
And if you come at me, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah. And it's just another symptom of that idea of to build myself up, I have to put other people down. Because having a gun is essentially, a threat.
It's an implicit threat, whether
it's an actual threat or an implicit threat, it's a threat. And so when people are like, I'm going to conceal carry, I'm going to, this, that, or the other thing, or open carry, it's a threatening act. It's an aggressive act to carry a weapon openly in public. Like, that's just an aggressive act.
Right.
And so I think people are looking for a way to take control of their surroundings, and this gun helps me do it. And so when you have people that they talk about sort of these, oh, they snapped, they just snapped. The guy in Vegas, he just snapped.
He didn't snap.
These are people that have suffered their entire lives, and this is the way they have decided they're going to deal with it. And that's the, sort of the mental health side of it certainly needs to be addressed. But the fact is, if that guy had throwing knives, he wouldn't have killed anybody.
Yeah.
He would have sat up there in that hotel room,
that's
50,
right.
whatever stories up that he was. I mean, he's not going to hurt anybody from
that's
up
right.
there. If this kid that walked into Sandy Hook had a baseball bat, he might have hurt a couple people. But they would have tackled him and disarmed him and all. But the fact that they're allowed to have these weapons, people say, well, if they're going to hurt people, they're going to find a way. It's not the gun. They're going to find a way to do it. Yeah, but the gun allows such an ease of use for people to sort of impersonally inflict
yes.
this massive amount of damage
yes.
in a
yes.
short period of
yes.
time
right.
that they almost don't have any opportunity to reflect. If you have to get close enough to somebody to hit them with a bat or to stab them or whatever you're going to do to hurt them, you're close enough to really see that person,
right.
and you're close enough to that pain and that aggression and everything to have an effect on you. But if you're shooting them with a gun from a distance, you don't have to engage that person at all. And
right.
that's really that disengaging of interaction with people is what a gun allows you to do, especially the kind that gives you the chance to shoot rapidly and to reload quickly with a lot of rounds. It makes it so much easier for these things to occur that, to address it simply as a mental health issue is insulting.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, very well said. Very well said. And you bring up an excellent point about the depersonalization that when you have these very rapid firing weapons, you can't look the person in the eye. So you can, before you even get to think about it, you can take out 30 people.
Yeah.
And without a thought.
Yep.
And one of the things that may be contributing to that, unfortunately, is technology, because when you are mm-hmm. playing those harsh video games,
mm-hmm.
Again, you're doing a lot of killing in those video games, and it's depersonalizing. So this is just a video game in real life. Now you're in a role playing game, in a live role playing game.
Right.
And I think
that can be a part of it.
But again, like you said, there are other countries where they play
They just Halo don't have the access.
Or one of those, right. Yeah, they don't have the access to the weapons.
They don't have the access to the weaponry, and that makes all the difference
it
in the
does.
World.
I mean, it's that simple.
You know, you can sit there and you know, in other countries, they stare at their phones and they don't talk to each other in person. And especially, you know, we always say the youth, the teenagers these days, everything. But it's not just them. It's all of us. You know, we disengage through our devices. But the difference is having access to, you know, sort of those high military grade weapons.
And I mean, it all feeds into it. I do think the technology
absolutely
creates a sense of disengagement. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, you know, we were talking about how the current administration encourages this jingoism and this aggressive selfishness. I think that social media does that too. People get aggressive and
anonymous aggression that they can kind of hide behind their phones, and they can say things that they would never say in real life, person to person.
And they might think twice about like saying even subtle aggressions on Facebook, on mm-hmm. Instagram, on mm-hmm. on Twitter. Then you have famous people saying aggressive things and it destroys their careers.
Yeah.
Because
little things pile up. I mean,
yes.
And in my job, my occupation as a librarian, you know, sort of digital media, digital citizenship is something that we go over, that we talk about and that we stress. The act that you kind of put forward online stays. You know, the stuff that you put out there remains. Even
yes.
if you think it's gone, you know,
someone can find it at some point.
And if you're putting hurtful words out there all the time, if that's, you know, we all slip and say stupid things online all the time. You go, I wish I'd thought before I hit send. But, you know, a lot of times, you know, if you're putting that out a lot, you know, that's going to come back. That's going to come back to you. You know, you're putting out painful words to people all the time. You know, it piles up on you. And I think that's something that people don't really realize is like they're, you know, this sort of idea of trolling, and they're putting stuff out there and they're one-upping each other. And, you know, you're going to say this and I'm going to get back at you and I'm going to say this. And it's always like, you push me, I'm going to push back harder, you know, kind of feeling online. But what happens to people is that comes back to them eventually, and they don't realize that that's sort of piling up on their psyche and on their soul and everything as they're putting that stuff out into the world.
You make an excellent point. Oh my goodness, I can go on with you. This is a fascinating conversation, and it's going to make a great podcast. I'm so thrilled that able to talk to me. So we have to wrap up because we're out of time.
All right.
So
I can talk. Yeah, I can talk all day. So I apologize if I.
So once again, we have been speaking with my very special guest, Don Curtis, who is going to do CT Ride for Our Lives.
Mm-hmm.
And if people want to contribute, mm-hmm. no monetary amounts, mm-hmm. where can they go? You have a Facebook page where they can go?
Yep, they can go. It's on Facebook and on Twitter, uh-huh. and it's Connecticut Ride for Our Lives, the
yes.
number four, CT Ride for Our Lives.
I see it.
And then also, if they want to go directly to actionnetwork.org and then just do a search for Connecticut Ride for Our Lives, because the web, you know, it's going to be so long, such a long URL, I'm
yes.
not going to give it, but they can search for it on the actionnetwork.org. So
very
any
good.
One of those three places, they'll find the link. And in fact, I think if they just Google it, Connecticut Ride for Our Lives,
yeah.
I just did it a few minutes ago and it came up.
Came
so.
Up. Perfect.
So they can get to it that way too.
So what a wonderful cause and what a wonderful conversation.
Thank you.
I'm so glad you were able to come today.
Me too.
So stick around for a few minutes while I wrap up.
Mm-hmm.
So just a couple of things. The Farm to Fork Fondo is happening again, and it will be unfortunately the same day as the CT Ride for Our Lives, or otherwise we'd come say hello to you. So we're going up to Vermont this time. We're going to be at the Champlain Lakes, and if you're interested in Farm to Fork Fondos, you can check out www.farmforkfondo.com. And Ron and I will be up there. July 28th, 2018 is the Thread City Sentry Ride. It starts at 7 a.m. from Edward Garrison Park, which is at 495 Phoenixville Road, which is Route 198 in Chaplin. Saturday, August 18th is the Steeplechase Bike Tour, which is a wonderful benefit for perception
Love
programs for the Willimantic Area Interfaith Ministry and for the No Free Shelter in Willimantic. The Ashford Metric Sentry Gravel Grinder will be Saturday, September 15th. You can check that out at ashfordmetricsentry.wordpress.com and also nearacearth.wordpress.com. Let's see. Calling all cyclists. Oh, that's that again. All right. And so this has been Fran Stewart sitting in for Peddlin' Ron. You've been listening to Bicycle Talk, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have been listening to this live or on podcast and would like to comment, you can send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to more past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org or on iTunes. If you have a comment or would like to contribute information to the show or be a guest on the show, please send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Fran the Radio Naturopath. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. You are listening to 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores.
Thank you for tuning in to WHUS Stores.
Welcome to WHUS.